Liz Cheney is the Republican candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives. She's a former Fox News commentator, an author, the co-founder of the Alliance for a Strong America, a former U.S. State Department official, and attorney. She's also the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney. Cheney says she continues to support Donald Trump for president and worries about working with a Hillary Clinton administration. She's also concerned about Republicans losing ground in the House and the Senate. I asked her if she will drop her hardline stance and work across the aisle to get things accomplished for Wyoming.
Yeah, I guess I look at it differently. You probably won't be surprised to hear that. I think that, if I am elected and I go to Washington as Wyoming's representative, I don't view my job as going there to achieve compromise. I view my job as going to Washington to make sure that every single day I'm doing what's in the very best interest of the people of Wyoming. And sometimes that will mean reaching across the aisle. I think coal is a perfect example. And in my experience, you know, what counts is doing your homework and being willing to sit across the table from people who might not agree with you on every issue and find areas where you can agree. And so, you know, if you look at coal, I'm sure that there are members around the country who probably don't agree with me on everything, but they don't want to see the utility rates for their constituents go up.
Do you bang your head against the wall on the coal issue, or do you also say at some point, you know, we can be a player in the renewables industry as well, and so we need to do both?
I don't think it's a choice. I think that in terms of coal, it's not about banging your head against the wall. It's about educating people. And we have to do a far better job at making sure people outside Wyoming recognize that it's not sort of, a choice. We don't have the option to be able to say, you know what, let's let the president's policy stand, because the coal industry is just too important for us nationwide. And we've got to have a representative who is able to carry that case nationwide and not afraid to stand up and say, yeah, absolutely, I'm going to stand up on behalf of these fossil fuels. I don't believe the people who say this is dirty energy. They're wrong. These are national treasures, and I'm going to fight for them.
Still, shouldn't we also be a player, though, in the renewable side?
Yeah, look, I think we need to do all of the above, but I fundamentally disagree with, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars of government subsidies that have really been wasted in too many instances on renewables. I don't have a problem with, you know, looking for ways that we can make sure we're using every resource we have to be energy independent. But I also think we have to acknowledge the truth, which is that we cannot run the country on renewables, and there is no path, no matter how much time you take between where we are today and a country running on renewables. You can't get there. And we shouldn't try to get there, because we have this unbelievable resource of coal and oil and gas, and we know that's what the country needs to be able to get economic growth going again.
Still, a lot of companies are starting to transition, and they frankly have to. One might wonder that they're moving ahead with things just because this is where they think everything's going.
Companies are making these decisions because they've had to, because they've looked to see, okay, well, the Clean Power Plan under this administration and certainly under Hillary isn't going to be going away probably. I mean, we're waiting for the decision in the D.C. Circuit. But, if it's a Hillary Clinton presidency, then it's going to be a different kind of a fight. But I think we have to, you know, those of us who recognize and understand the importance of fossil fuels have to be in a position where we're saying, now, how is it that the people that are pushing the keep it in the ground cause have been so effective? How is it they've organized themselves? How are they funded? And we have to find ways to be able to match that and better it.
Republican candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives Liz Cheney is visiting with us. I want to change gears and talk a little bit about education. What at the federal level can be done to improve specifically K-12 education?
Well, I think getting the federal government out of the way. I mean, I think if you look at, you know, the period of time for which we've had a Department of Education, there's a negative correlation over that period of time between the existence of the Department of Education at a federal level and how our kids and our schools are doing. And I look at this issue, you know, as a mom, and we have five kids today. Three of them are still in K-12. It's a real problem. I mean, Common Core, for example, I think has got to go. I think it has to be repealed. When you look at the combination of the curriculum, which is wrong and which is teaching our kids, you know, things that it shouldn't be teaching them, the massive numbers of standardized tests our kids have to take today, and the teachers who are shackled by it, the teachers who really want to do their job. We have incredible teachers in this state. My kids have incredible teachers. But in too many instances, their hands are tied by the new Common Core rules and restrictions and the standardized tests. So they can't do what they love, and they can't figure out how each individual kid learns best. And I also don't like the big data piece of Common Core. So I think we ought to get back to letting our local school systems and our parents and our teachers have more control over education.
Some of them like Common Core, though, and some of the school districts in our state, they'd be allowed to continue if they like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with Common Core, though, is you have a situation now where, you know, you've got sort of one or two companies that have really captured the textbook industry for Common Core, one or maybe two companies that have captured the test for Common Core. And I'll give you a specific example. You know, Common Core has these textbooks called the Journeys Readers, and they've just adopted in Park County. And here's a problem, you know. One of the most, maybe the most revolutionary concept at the heart of our founding as a nation is the idea that our rights come from God, and we institute the government to guarantee those rights. They're inalienable. The government is instituted by us to protect them. Well, the Journeys Readers say just the opposite. The Journeys Readers say that in the United States, the government gives the citizens their rights. And that's really damaging and subversive in many ways. And I can't say it was intentionally subversive, but it's wrong. We shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't strip out one of the most important notions at the center of our founding and have these textbooks that are Common Core textbooks teaching our kids something wrong about it.
If a teacher, though, brought that up in the classroom as they're teaching, and it's not in some Common Core textbook, but it's a good old-fashioned Wyoming teacher who raises some interesting viewpoints that you may not agree with, that's okay, though, right? Don't you want an exchange of ideas?
Of course. I think an exchange of ideas is really important. But I think too often what's happened in education today is that there's sort of a liberal, progressive set of ideas that's being pushed. And if you say anything that is in opposition to those ideas, and, you know, man-made climate change is a perfect example of that. And I applaud what's been done in terms of the science standards to try to avoid using the original science standards, which were very anti-fossil fuels. But there's this dogma that really, you know, too often it comes from our colleges of education. And we're no longer allowing the kind of exchange of ideas that benefits our system and our society.
Let's talk a little bit about the Wind River Reservation. There's been some concern about funding for healthcare there. We're hearing more about crime on the reservation. Obviously, that has become a federal issue. So I'm curious what you've been hearing and what you'd like to do there, maybe to address both those areas.
Well, I think you know, the situation on the reservation is really tragic in a lot of ways, and got to be in a position where we're making sure that people have opportunity, people have hope. And I think that that's complicated in some instances by the history. I just think making sure that we're doing everything possible, especially for young people, to make sure that they have every opportunity available to them. But you've got huge problems with drugs, huge problems with crime, with alcoholism, with broken families, the kinds of things that you see in other parts of our country, in inner cities, for example. And it's that real fabric of society that I think we've got to do everything we can to help rebuild.
Senator Enzi was in here the other day, and we were talking about the Affordable Care Act, and we were talking about specifically reforms. And we've touched on this in the past, but he was saying after the election, we've got to get after this. This is something where you got to reach across the aisle. And it does sound like both presidential candidates would be open to some discussion. I mean, what would you like to see change there?
Yeah. I think you have to start with repealing it. I think it's been even worse than people thought it would be, and we're about to see a whole new series of taxes hit people come 2017. And so I think you have to start with repeal, and then I think that you have to allow people to buy insurance across state lines. You know, for me, the key is you want to make sure people, patients and their families and their doctors are making medical decisions. And to put people in the driver's seat, you have to force insurance companies to compete for their business. You know, when we're in a situation like we are today where there's one insurance company covering the state, people aren't going to be able to get the choice that they really need. They aren't going to be able to get the policies that are tailored to their needs. And frankly, Republicans and Democrats alike have, you know, done what they can to defend the insurance companies in too many instances. And I just think you've got to, you know, have market forces and competition inserted into the process. And I also think we have to have tort reform. I also believe we have to have portability. That has to be part of whatever new system we put in place, so that when you're facing an economic downturn like we are right now and you lose your job, you don't also automatically lose your insurance. And pre-existing condition coverage is also very important, so that people can't be denied coverage because of pre-existing conditions. So I think those are all things that have to be part of a solution. And fundamentally, though, we have to put people at the center of it, not the government, and introduce some market competition that helps tailor the kind of care and policies people can get.
And the last question on this point is just, how do you keep everybody from losing their insurance if they've been going through the Affordable Care Act? How do we make sure that if you do repeal it, that we don't hurt those people?
I think that's really important. We can't pull the rug out from under people. And I think that what we have to do is make sure that, you know, when the repeal happens, there's something that can replace it right away, and that you take into account the need for people, you know, as I said, not to automatically be kicked off, not to lose their insurance, you know, when you're going through this process. But it has to be fixed. And fixing it, in my view, requires repealing it.
Balancing the budget, I imagine, is a key part of what you want to see happen. How do we get there to your satisfaction? I mean, how do you get?
I think that, you know, Congress has an obligation to make hard choices. And the system we're operating under now is basically, you know, this Budget Control Act and sequestration, which was put in place a couple of years ago when Congress couldn't come to agreement. And they said, well, we're going to make this list of all these really draconian cuts, because we think if we do that and that's the alternative, then we'll be forced to come to agreement. Well, of course, it didn't force them to come to agreement. And so the cuts are in place. And it's had this effect of, you know, 50% of the cuts are coming out of the Defense Department. I believe what you have to do is say, all right, look, the federal government is doing too much today and we can't afford everything it's doing. But there are things we have to have it do, like defend the nation. And so we've got to be in a situation where we're willing to cut agencies, where we're willing to cut the size of agencies and cut their budgets. And certainly I'd say the EPA is at the top of my list. And then we have to be able to say, look, you know, how do we get economic growth going again in the country? And the kind of growth that really will help us begin to take care of our debt. And I think that comes from, you know, that kind of economic policies that cut taxes and that allow people to invest and keep more of their own money and have the private sector create jobs again.
Good luck with the rest of your campaign. Liz Cheney, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Bob. Great to be with you.